Later today, the collapse of an investment firm rattles Wall Street. We'll take a look at that. But first, and perhaps closer to home, school lunch. Now, a new federal law kicked in this year, putting limits on calories, trans fat, sodium, increasing whole grains for kids. The law added just 6 cents to the government subsidy that goes to all public school lunch, so some school districts are struggling to meet the new requirements. And a Chicago public teacher knows just how far many schools have to go. Sarah Wu ate a school lunch every day for a year and blogged about it as Mrs. Q. Now her secret findings can be told in a new book, Fed Up with Lunch. She has pictures of the meals she ate, like the bagel dog, a hot dog wrapped in a soggy bagel dough. And she also has insight. She learned many kids didn't know French fries came from potatoes, that a slice of pizza meets the USDA criteria for 2 servings of grain, but rice, a grain, only counts as one. Those grill marks on chicken or Salisbury steaks, they're fake. We want to talk school lunch today with Sarah Wu. She joins us from Chicago Public Radio. Sarah, welcome.
Thank you so much.
We're going to put some of your pictures at hereandnow.org. They're beautifully taken, but they are, what are they? And I'm looking at this meal from January 13th. I'm not even sure what it is. Can you see that? January 13th, it's sort of a pasta next to this black blob.
Good guess. What you see there is called Tex-Mex. And, on the right is a bowl with turkey meat over rice, which you can't see the rice. Mm-hmm. And then on the left, a lot of my readers thought that was a brownie, but that turns out to be refried beans. And, that was my very favorite lunch.
Actually, that's the one that came the closest to being foodish.
That's what I thought. Yeah. I thought it tasted like something I could prepare in my own kitchen.
As opposed to what? Like, give us a sense of what are some of the other meals.
The Salisbury steak with the fake grill marks. I just don't even know what's in that processed meat patty. I wonder to myself if it could be full of fillers and other things that you can't pronounce.
Because certainly the chicken nuggets are full of fillers. On page 29, I'm going to turn there, you list the ingredients, not necessarily in the chicken nuggets that were in the school because you can't find them anywhere, what the ingredients are, but the chicken McNuggets from McDonald's. Can you read that list there? It's on the bottom of page 29.
Chicken, water, salt, sodium phosphates, battered and breaded with bleached white flour, water, wheat flour, food starch modified, salt, spices, wheat gluten, paprika, dextrose, yeast, garlic powder, partially hydrogenated soybean oil, and cottonseed oil with mono and diglycerides, leavening, sodium acid pyrophosphate.
Okay, actually, this could go on way too long.
I know.
Let me just say that it doesn't list antibiotics, you note, which we know are in factory farm meats and must be in that chicken McNugget. But it does list way towards the end there an anti-foaming agent. What's an anti-foaming agent?
To the best of my understanding, when they prepare the chicken for a chicken nugget, they strip what's left over after they've taken off the good cuts of chicken, and the little bits are really processed in with all these fillers, and then they're sort of pumped out. If you've seen the pictures, you have to Google mechanically separated chicken because it's pumped out. It looks like strawberry soft serve. It's pink. And then they must blurp it out into little chicken nugget shapes and either bake or fry it. And they also, I found that chicken patties that I ate seemed to have the same consistency of a chicken nugget. So, it's not just what I think parents think of when they think of a chicken nugget, which would be chicken chopped and then breaded and fried in an oil that they might be able to recognize.
Right. Or, it's not what parents think when they say peanut butter and jelly sandwich. A sandwich, in my mind, has bread. But this had what?
It came foil wrapped like an ice cream sandwich. And the bread, quote, was actually a graham cracker, which had been thawed because it had come in frozen and then it was thawed and then the kids were served the peanut butter and jelly. I could barely stomach it. It had an inch of peanut butter. The graham cracker was really sort of just crumbly. It was terrible.
Well, you say you could barely stomach it. You didn't stomach it. I mean, you became physically ill that night.
That night was the one night I got very sick, and you really wouldn't think that of all the things that I ate, it would have been the peanut butter and jelly sandwich, but that's what it was.
Well, and more disturbing, this peanut butter and jelly s'more, which it sounds like, on a graham cracker. You know, as you write, the kids in your school only had 20 minutes for lunch. That doesn't include the time spent online and trying to unwrap this stuff. So they rarely eat things. And that means other kids are eating more of certain things. So one kid tells you he had six of those sandwiches, almost 2,000 calories.
Right. Kids make little lunchtime deals with each other. The kids that don't want to eat the peanut butter and jelly sandwiches can pawn them off to their friends.
Well, we mentioned they're packaged. They're prepackaged. They're sort of like TV dinners. Why do they come that way?
All of the meals came prepackaged with plastic over the top because the school that I was working at last year does not have a full kitchen where you could prepare large meals. It all comes in frozen in these little containers, and everything's reheated in huge ovens. It's an assembly line process. It's very industrialized.
And we mentioned the USDA grain requirement. School lunches are overseen by the Department of Agriculture, not the Department of Education. And because they have these grain requirements, you write, that sometimes means pairing, a cheese sandwich with pretzels to get up to enough grains. Cookies are popular lunch menu items, but they're pretty much sugar and dyes.
Yeah, that's right. I found that when there was a holiday, they would offer a cookie. And I thought, you know, that's sort of a nice gesture, but really what's on top of the cookies is often food dyes that are artificially created in labs. And I didn't know any of this when I first started out. I knew there was something up with the food in the cafeteria, but I had no idea when I started this adventure into school lunch. I just thought, it's only food. What's going to happen? What's the worst that could happen to me? And then I just became so super hyper aware of food in our world.
Well, aware that, for instance, in the UK, many of the dyes that we use in school lunches here are banned because they're shown to produce hyperactivity in kids. Or the other reaction that you started to see in the classroom after they were having things like these icy bars that, you know, like a cherry ice bar, which had no cherry, but was just dyes and corn syrup. What did you start seeing in your students?
Because I was eating the lunches myself along with the kids, when I saw spaced out children after lunch, I was able to really draw a line between how they were acting and what we all ate. The days that they offered like a frozen juice bar, which I called an icy, and the kids, all of them, without exception, called it ice cream, they would eat that first. And depending on how much time they had at lunch, which varied, there was on the schedule 20 minutes for lunch. But depending on where the kids were coming from and how long the line was, my colleagues and I determined that each child had between 9 and 13 minutes in which to eat lunch. And because the school where I was working, they had no recess, a lot of the kids were so desperate for time to socialize with their friends that they would choose the most appetizing thing on their tray to eat first, and then, of course, pair it with a chocolate milk, and that would be it for them. And many of the students really didn't like the food at all, and so it was common that kids would just drink the chocolate milk, and maybe if there was a fruit cup, they would drink the syrup, and that would be what they would eat.
And then they'd go to your class as a zombie. That's Sarah Wu. Again, she points out in her book, Fed Up with Lunch, schools that are changing the norm, great new initiatives. But what about your school? Amanda Montgomery of Muncie, Indiana, writes that her kids' lunches are so overprocessed they're disgusting and they pack a lunch. But some parents can't afford that. What about you? Send us your thoughts, hereandnow.org. More with Sarah Wu in 1 minute.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science. Find over 200 job openings at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to our conversation about school lunch. Every day for a year, Chicago Elementary Public School teacher Sarah Wu ate the same lunch as her students. First, she blogged about it anonymously as Mrs. Q. Now she has a book out called Fed Up with Lunch. But Sarah, when you first started blogging, you were stunned. You started hearing from so many people. What were they saying?
You know, I heard a lot from parents who were desperate to make change. Some parents emailed to say that at their school, kids were getting chicken nuggets 3 times a week. Or in some high schools, pizza and fries were served every day. And when a child chose a pizza, fries, and fruit, that was a reimbursable school meal from the USDA. And I think there are a lot of parents out there who really want things to change. And we all realize when we think deeply about these issues, we know that to change the direction of our country, we actually need to start looking at the food we're eating.
Well, as you say, literally looking at it, because if, you know, parents listening are saying, well, I get that school lunch menu printed, I put it on the fridge, there was spaghetti and meatballs, bread and butter, sliced pears, that sounds pretty good. They don't know that the pears are drowning in this corn syrup, or that the meatballs might not be the meatball that they make at home.
Right. I mean, a lot of these processed meats have so many fillers in it to make it affordable for the school district to purchase.
For people saying, well, wait a second, these are meals that the government and schools are trying to give to kids at low cost to supplement what they're not getting at home. It's up to the parents to feed children. But, you know, what were some of the lunches that you and some of your readers, some of the people on your blog were seeing kids come in with?
Oftentimes I'd see kids come in with a lunchbox that contained a banana and a plastic bottle of flavored water.
Some of your readers saw a can of soda and a bag of Fritos. That would be lunch.
Exactly. And even when I think kids go to high school where their parents give them money, they don't go through the line. They end up at the a la carte window and buy cookies, chips, and whatever they want to eat for lunch.
Well, and then to top it off, these kids in your school and across the country, a lot of schools don't have recess.
That's right. It's shocking to me that recess gets canceled so often. I'll be sitting in a session with a student, and over the PA, I'll hear, okay, recess has been canceled today. And I wonder what causes that. But what I do know is that we are under so much stress at school to show gains in reading and math. And it's just very tunnel vision right now in so many public schools, where I think the testing is taking us in the wrong direction, especially when we're denying children recess.
Well, and they have no place to work off these, you know, these sugar calories that they're eating at lunch.
And not only that, what I find is that when they get a chance for movement, they do better and they can focus better. Oftentimes, I'll take kids and we'll do some jumping jacks before we sit down, and, you know, it gets them really warmed up and gets the wiggles out.
Well, as your blog is growing, you're also hearing from people who are getting it right. What were some of the things that you heard you felt were part of this lunch revolution almost?
Here in Chicago, there are a couple charter schools that have some really terrific lunches. And I know even among like the big giant Chartwells, which is one of the biggest food service management companies when it comes to food service in schools, they're working to try and make lunches better by providing fresh vegetables from locally sourced like farmers in Illinois, which I find heartening. We need to encourage that to continue, but we also need to increase the amount of time given to lunch so that even if we do everything we want, if we get a salad bar in every school, which is another thing that I think would make such a difference for kids. What was so interesting about the project was that I got to see some of the improvements that I know that some of the food service management companies are starting to pay attention and starting to do some things. So, for example, they offered a little salad in a cup, and it was very small. But I saw the kids grab it. Like, they were curious and they wanted to try it. And so I think we need to give kids a little credit.
So you saw the school lunch change even in the year that you were eating it. But you also learned about all the changes that are happening and all the research that's going into it. Cornell professor Brian Wansink, we've had him on. He's a marketing person, actually. And he discovered that if you use attractive bowls for fruit or just put a light on fruit, one school used a desk lamp to put a spotlight on a bowl of fruit, and sales increased 186%. What was his other idea? He had another idea with chocolate milk.
Yeah, if you put chocolate milk just at the back of the freezer, kids will just grab the plain milk, which is out front. What's great about a lot of the things that Professor Wansink has recommended is that they're either free or they're very low cost.
Well, and we just want to make one nod. It's not the lunch lady's fault. You heard from a lot of lunch ladies who, they feel they've just been sort of downsized to servers. They're not cooks anymore.
That's right. So many of these women and men are so devoted to the kids, but they don't feel a lot of pride about the food that they're serving, and it can be very demoralizing.
What they're reduced to doing in a lot of cases now, again, not everyone, but in a lot of cases now, is helping them try to get that awful plastic wrap off their off their fruit
right.
cups. And finally, you say this isn't just a matter of health, although that would be enough, that we're actually potentially making kids dumb, literally not letting them be as smart as they can be. You talk about Jamie Oliver and what he's been able to do raising grades in the UK.
Yeah, you know, he started his campaign to change school lunch in the UK. think it was back in 2004. And so then experts in the UK went ahead and studied the results of academic achievement in the schools where he was able to change school lunch and compared them to schools that refused him entry. And they found increases in English and science. Attendance improved, which that's so important to learning in general. I think people don't think about learning happening in the cafeteria, but actually it's happening in the cafeteria right now, even though nobody's instructing them in a traditional sense. Yeah. They're learning that fast food is endorsed by the school. We need to put an end to that so that children learn about real food and learn how to feed themselves right.
Sarah Wu, her new book is Fed Up with Lunch, How One Anonymous Teacher Revealed the Truth About School Lunches and How We Can Change Them. Thank you most of all for eating a year's worth of school lunch.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And again, your thoughts on school lunch at herenow.org. And later this week, we'll meet an entrepreneur trying to make changes but finding school administration costs eat into his food budget. Funny you should mention, because tomorrow on Here and Now, we're going to meet a college professor who says exploding administration costs are behind college tuition hikes. That's tomorrow. Still ahead today, Wall Street wonders who's next Here and Now.
Support for Here and Now comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced. The Institute of Contemporary Art Boston, presenting Dance Draw, an exploration of art and performance. On view now, ICABoston.org. And Philips Healthcare, dedicated to improving access, managing costs, and helping clinicians improve care globally. At philips.com/healthcare.